morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday, the 3rd of September, the quote-unquote final long weekend of the summer, although I have high hopes for Thanksgiving long weekend coming up in October. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside analyst Ezra Ginsberg. You can reach us in studio via Twitter, at Illegal Curve. If you're looking for us on Facebook, it's facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. I say good morning to my colleague, the handsome one, the effervescent one, the intelligent one, Ezra Ginsberg.
What's going on, man?
You know, I called you handsome, effervescent, and what was the last one I said? I can't remember.
I think that's what you said. But
I thought there was a third adjective.
Needless to say, that was a very good intro.
Thank you. I do what I can for you every now and then.
Yeah, just ready to bring go here, Drew. It's September.
I mean, it
we've
is
got
September.
The World Cup coming up. We're about 2 weeks away from the start of training camp. Like, we have hockey to talk about here.
Well, let me ask you, is your interest in, I mean, we'll talk about the World Cup. There are, of course, a number of players that withdrew from the World Cup throughout the course of the week. Teams losing players who have not yet recovered from off-season surgeries or players who have hurt themselves in off-season training who probably aren't that interested in, you know, I suspect a lot of these guys who've dropped out, if this was the, you know, the playoffs or this was the stretch drive of the regular season, they'd find their way into the lineup. I think a lot of guys are bailing out with minor nicks and injuries just so that they don't do any more damage to the before the start of the regular season. Has the World Cup, you know, as in we'll talk about Blake Wheeler and his captaincy coming up momentarily. You any more excited for the World Cup now that September has hit and the majority of the summer is in the rearview mirror, as much as I'm chagrined to say that? Are you a little more excited for the World Cup now?
I am more excited, and you know, this World Cup of hockey format was not my favorite, and it wasn't really your favorite. And
no,
I remember when Richie
still
was
not.
Still on the show, he wasn't really liking the new format that they picked. We thought it should be best on best, just countries. But I think I am getting a little bit more excited about it, Drew. And you mentioned the injuries, and that was to be expected, especially with guys like Jamie Benn and Duncan Keith, who were undergoing off-season surgery. And I mean, look, the format is what it is. We're going to see some really good hockey, and regardless if it's gimmicky, which I think it is,
yeah, it
with
is.
Team North America and Team Europe. We're going to see lots of good hockey. And when it comes to Team North America, sure, they lost Sean Monahan, but to go out there and be able to watch guys like Austin Matthews and Connor McDavid, and when you talk about the Jets, Mark Scheifele, Jacob Trouba, Connor Hellebuck, it's going to be an exciting team to watch. I still think that...
You mentioned the Jets. Sorry for interrupting. Did you know that Nikolaj Ehlers is currently playing in a hockey tournament?
I didn't know that.
The Olympic qualifying tournament. So for all the countries that don't...
I did know that that was going on.
Yeah. So Nikolaj Ehlers is playing, of course, for Team Denmark. Which makes sense. I had no idea that this tournament was going on until yesterday when the news came out about Frederik Andersen, the Leafs goaltender, getting injured in that game. That Nikolaj Ehlers, of course, it makes logical sense that he's playing for Team Denmark, but I had no clue whatsoever that this hockey tournament featuring, you know, some of the lesser hockey powers in the world is taking place. But apparently, for Jets fans, Nikolaj Ehlers in action in this Olympic qualifying tournament that's taking place somewhere in Europe.
And we don't even know if the NHL is going to be participating at the 2018 Olympics. So you have all of these NHL players. I imagine Andrei Kopitar
is there for Slovenia.
Is there as well. So yeah. You're talking about a lot of NHL players that are hoping to get their countries qualified for the Olympics,
mm-hmm.
but we don't even know if the best players in the world are going to be competing. So I'm sure that NHL teams aren't going to publicly say that they're not happy that some of their players are playing in this tournament right now, but I would imagine that they would want them in the NHL cities preparing
training.
For training camp,
yeah.
Skating at the MTS Iceplex when it comes to Ehlers. So,
well,
I
if
mean,
you're the Leafs.
You know what, Drew, though? I'm not going to knock any of these guys ever because these guys want to help their countries.
Sure.
Making it to the Olympics when you're from Denmark or Slovenia means a lot more than Canada or Sweden in the sense that Canada and Sweden are already ranked at the top of the IIHF rankings. So they know that they're going to the Olympics. So these guys are the best players that the country has to offer when you're talking about Ehlers and Andrei Kopitar. But when it comes to the World Cup of Hockey, yeah, back to your question, I'm starting to get a little bit more excited because when you talk about the World Cup of Hockey, we haven't seen it since 2004.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, if you're a hockey fan, you're going to love seeing the best players in the world go head-to-head. And regardless if it's Canada versus Sweden or Canada versus North America or whatever, if you're a hockey fan, I really do think once the puck drops, on September 17th, you're going to get into it.
And we'll talk more about the World Cup of Hockey, but let's get into the news of the week for the Winnipeg Jets. And that, of course, is the announcement of Blake Wheeler, to the surprise of, I would suspect, very few, as in, I suspect that for yourself, this is also wasn't a surprise. Blake Wheeler named the new captain of the Winnipeg Jets, Mark Scheifele and Dustin Byfuglien named as his assistants. So your thoughts, you know, Ezzy, first of all, on the announcement that Blake Wheeler is going to be the captain of the Winnipeg Jets this coming year and for the foreseeable future.
Right, and I think we're going to play a clip here of Shane Knighty talking about Blake Wheeler coming up. But when it comes to Blake Wheeler, you're right, Drew. Both of us thought that it was going to be Blake Wheeler who was going to be named captain. It was really between Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele, I think. But when you're talking about Blake Wheeler, you're talking about the guy who I think has been the unofficial leader of this team probably for three years now. And when you're talking about the Jets 2.0, Blake Wheeler has led the Jets in scoring three of the first 5 years. He was second in the years that he didn't lead the team in scoring. But not only that, he's been the most consistent player for this team. And when the Jets have needed a big goal, he's been there. And when the Jets have needed a boost, he's been there. And we've seen him wear his heart on his sleeve many times over the years. So, yeah, absolutely, Drew. Naming Blake Wheeler was a no-brainer. He's one of the top right-wingers in the game. And as I said, he's been the most consistent player for this team. And, you know, it's nice to see Mark Scheifele at 23 years old get an A. And it's nice to see Dustin Byfuglien get an A, because a lot of people thought maybe that Mark Stewart was just going to keep his A, or maybe they'd go with a Brian Little or Tyler Myers for the other A. But let's be honest, Buff is another one of those leaders of this team. As far as I'm concerned, Buff and Wheeler have been the two most consistent players for this team over the last 5 years. It's tough to argue with that, right? And your best players should be the ones wearing the letters, right?
They absolutely should be. You mentioned Shane Knighty. Here's Shane Knighty from earlier in the week, of course, Jets analyst here on TSN 1290 and on TSN Jets as well, pardon me, TSN 3, talking about Blake Wheeler being named as the captain of the Winnipeg Jets.
Just the steps he's taken as a player, not even a player, but as a man, you know, and I was able to see him as a rookie and, you know, the type of game he played there, the type of player, you know, and the growth, the normal growth, you see the maturation process of a young player with that amount of skill to round it out, to become the player he has, to become the complete player, to find what he needs to do on a nightly basis. And he has become a true pro.
You know, I think Sheriff Knighty there really sums it up pretty well in that Blake Wheeler is the driving force for the Winnipeg Jets on the ice. When he's going, the Jets are in a good position to win the game. When he has an off night, and, you know, he had more off nights years ago when the team just first returned to Winnipeg than he currently does. I mean, he was sixth in the league in scoring last year, so he's certainly been a late bloomer in his career. But most nights, Blake Wheeler is a significant force on the ice, and that's what you want to see in the captain of your team, a guy who, even when he's not feeling it 100%, because there's lots of games in the course of a long 82-game season that a guy might not be feeling at 100%, that he's able to work through that adversity, that internal adversity, to still make an impact, be it on the score sheet or just on the ice surface, so that the opposing teams have to game plan against him night in and night out.
Drew, he hasn't had a bad game in, I would say, 3 years. And he doesn't miss a lot of games either. Mm-hmm. In 5 years with the Jets, I think he's missed 6 games.
Something like that, yeah.
So you're talking about a guy who, you're right, sometimes when you're not feeling it, even though you're in the lineup, he's able to muster up enough energy to somehow still contribute on the ice. So, I mean, what else can you say about Blake Wheeler? I mean, Blake Wheeler has really taken on the identity of this team. And, you know, Blake Wheeler, we've seen him evolve as a player. When Blake Wheeler first came to Winnipeg, and he still led the Jets in scoring that first year, but there were still some criticisms about Blake Wheeler as far as, is he really a leader of this team? And some of the actions on the ice or things that he said in the media, the guy speaks his heart, and I like that. And,
sure,
you know, that's a little bit in contrast to Andrew Ladd, who, you know, was a little bit more cliched in the way he spoke. Nothing against him. That was just his style.
Mm-hmm.
Blake Wheeler, if he's upset, he would tell the media about it, right? So Blake Wheeler's a guy on the ice. He's dropped his gloves, for example. Not that Andrew Ladd didn't drop his gloves, but Blake Wheeler's a guy who isn't really known for that, whereas Ladd's a little bit more of a feisty player. But Blake Wheeler has taken on that identity. When he came over to Winnipeg, he said, guys, like, I'm a scorer. I'm not a power forward. he's kind of turned into a power forward. Don't get me wrong. I mean, that's not his style of game.
You don't see him throwing crushing body checks.
He's not Keith Primo, but the point is, this guy does whatever it takes to win a hockey game. And, you know, I think it's shown in the fact that he was picked to the Olympic team, mm-hmm. and he's starting to get all the accolades. I mean, last year, the Jets had a very poor season. Blake Wheeler had 78 points and was one of the bright lights on this team, in addition to Mark Scheifele had a great year.
Sure.
Nikolai Ehlers had a great rookie year. But there weren't that many players on this team who exceeded expectations. And Blake Wheeler, and I think that says a lot, Drew, about Blake Wheeler, that in a down year for the Winnipeg Jets, when they didn't meet expectations,
mm-hmm.
they didn't follow up a year where they made the playoffs, Blake Wheeler still brought his game every night.
There's not very many players in the NHL who combine his size and he's 6'5", 225 pounds. This guy is a load on the ice who moves with the speed and the agility that he moves with. I mean, when you see Blake Wheeler, I mean, we know that, you know, it's a set play. When you see him flying down the left wing and then cutting over, you know, with the puck on a stick, there's not very many defensemen who can defend against that. There's not very many goaltenders who want to face that. That's a Mack truck coming at you. And now this is a Mack truck who we know his skill set and his ability to put the puck in the back of the net. You know, you mentioned it's 78 points, good for sixth in the NHL last year. But this is a guy who now officially takes on the leadership role with the captaincy on his chest.
And he deserves it. And, you know, you could see how big the smile was on his face earlier this week
on
at the MTS Center.
On his 30th birthday,
right?
No less.
Yeah, Dave Minuk was down there, and he snapped a bunch of pictures. And he was in the scrums and everything like that. And Blake Wheeler, I think he wanted this.
Yeah.
And it's not that he would have been upset if, for example, Mark Scheifele was named captain, but he's the leader of this team. I mean, if you do a poll, I think we did a poll on the website. I think it was something like 80 or 90% picked Blake Wheeler as the captain. I mean, the guy has led by example, right? And like we said, he just doesn't ever stop, and he rarely has a bad game. I haven't seen him have a bad game maybe since the first or second Jet season.
I don't disagree at all. He's certainly been a driving force for this team for the last number of years, and now he is able to wear the captaincy that, you know, corresponds with that being that driving force. You know, going to the assistants, no surprise that Scheifele gets an A, you know, after signing the big 8-year extension where he's made a significant commitment to the organization. Are you surprised that Dustin Byfuglien, a guy who doesn't really like talking to the media, doesn't do it very often? We know he was a leader in the dressing room, but are you surprised at all that he actually is now going to wear an A on his uniform, wear an A on his jersey, as opposed to sort of being more of that behind-the-scenes sort of leader? You know, because he is going to have to be probably more forthcoming and more available to the assembled media just by nature of having an assistancy on his jersey.
Drew, Buff was an A during the first year. So it's not like Dustin Byfuglien hasn't been an assistant captain before or associate captain. First year, it was Dustin Byfuglien and I believe Chris Thorburn who wore the A's. And I know what you're saying. I mean, I think a lot of people, again, thought it might be Brian Little, who's worn the A, I think, towards the end of last year, or Tyler Myers. But I think that, sure, Buff is going to have to talk to the media a little bit more, Drew, for sure. But I think last year he proved that he took a step up, or the next step in his evolution as a Winnipeg Jet. And he also signed the big contract.
Sure.
I think there's something to be said for that. But
you make a commitment to the organization is going to, quote-unquote, reward you, if you deem it a reward, you know, with the responsibility and with the honor that comes with being publicly designated as a captain or as an associate captain.
Put it this way, Drew. I don't think there's going to be anybody in that Winnipeg Jets dressing room that isn't going to be happy that Dustin Byfuglien has an A on his jersey and he's going to be the guy out there talking to the refs, and it might be from the penalty box sometimes.
Uh-huh.
But no, I like the choice. I really do. And I was a little bit surprised. I actually thought it was going to be Myers, but I still like the Buff choice. Because Buff, let's be honest, whether he has an A on his jersey or not,
sure,
he's the emotional leader of this team.
Yeah, has been from the start. He's been the guy who always wears his emotions on his sleeve, and he's now rewarded with it with an associate captaincy along with Mark Scheifele and, of course, the new captain of the Winnipeg Jets. Jonas Siegel of the Canadian Press, national hockey writer, is going to join us next. We'll ask him about the World Cup of Hockey. We'll ask him about the goaltending uniforms as well. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. You're listening to TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel and Ezra Ginsberg with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the program Jonas Siegel. Jonas is the national hockey writer for the Canadian Press. Jonas, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, my pleasure. How you doing, guys?
Doing very well, Jonas. How's your summer going, buddy?
It's going well. It's been interesting with, you know, preparing for the World Cup, because obviously it kind of changes your plans, and it changes the plans basically of everyone. Like, I did a story this week on, you know, the coaches in the World Cup adapting to their training camps to potentially not being there. Obviously, we've seen players have to change their routine. So it's been an interesting summer, that's for sure.
Yeah, I wanted to actually start with the World Cup, so that is an excellent segue there, Jonas. You know, for the last couple of weeks, I've been asking our guests if they've sort of been feeling any World Cup buzz. I know it's still now just the early September, and when I was asking them before, it was sort of late August, and it's still a bit of a sleepy time in the hockey world. Now that September 1st has hit, now that you're based in Toronto, if I'm not mistaken, are you sensing in Toronto that there is a buzz growing for this World Cup, or is the World Cup going to be overshadowed by the Toronto Blue Jays and a Toronto Blue Jays pennant drive, which is taking place? Or are you getting the sense that now that September has hit, school's back in session, or pretty soon back in session, that people are starting to shift their focus to this World Cup of hockey?
I'm not sure that they are. You know, and the one hard thing when you're in hockey media is you assume that everything is as important to you as it is to others. And I think the World Cup is a good example of that. Like, I've been focused on the World Cup. I've been dissecting rosters and looking at goalies, and obviously injuries now become a big part of it. But in Toronto, I don't sense any buzz. I live right downtown, and I don't feel a buzz about it yet, but that's because it hasn't started. Like, I feel like once it gets going, once, you know, people see Canada play, once they get a look at this North America team, which I think should be interesting, maybe it'll get more interest and people will start talking about it, but it's going to be interesting to see how it collides, like you said, with the Jays, because they are the hot ticket in town. You walk around Toronto and everybody is in Jays gear and everybody's in Jays mode, you know. And this tournament doesn't have much history. Like, you go back 2004, no one really remembers that. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure what it's going to be like in Toronto. They're really trying, the NHL and the PA, to create buzz. You know, you saw this week they announced that Green Day is going to be playing, the Killers are going to be playing at some of these fan fest type things, but I'm not sure it'll create the buzz that they hope it does, just because it's not the Olympics, and, you know, there are the Jays, and people are really on board with that.
I just hope that they play When I Come Around, because that was my favorite Green Day song. Jonas, you had an interesting article, two actually interesting articles for the Canadian Press last week. You sat down with both Donald Fehr and Gary Bettman. Over the course of those conversations with Donald Fehr and Gary Bettman, did you get the sense that there is a good chance that the NHL is going to go to the Olympics? And as far as the World Cup of Hockey goes, did you get the sense that they're going to keep this format 4 years from now, or there's a chance that they're going to revisit this and possibly not have Team North America and Team Europe next time?
I'll answer the second question first. I think they will tweak the tournament if they do it again 4 years from now. I'm not sure if there'll be a Team North America. I'm not sure there'll be a Team Europe. I feel like the sense I've gotten is that they will adjust the teams next time around. But the difficult part with that is people initially were, I think, dismayed by this idea of a North American team. But now I think it's sort of intriguing. It doesn't make sense conventionally that Connor McDavid can't play for Canada or Jack Eichel can't play for the Americans. I do think they'll adjust it somehow next time around. I wonder where it will be, because Gary Bettman did say that it potentially could move from city to city to city. As for the Olympics, I don't know. I think there's a chance they don't go. This is a really... It really just comes down to money. You know, if the IOC is going to make the NHL and the PA cover these out-of-pocket expenses, which are things like transportation, accommodation, insurance, if they their hard line in that I don't know if the NHL and the PA are going to want to do it, because it already, the Olympics are already an inconvenience. It doesn't make sense to me. Like, I get the appeal of the Olympics. I like watching the Olympics. I know the players love going to the Olympics. But it doesn't make sense to shut down your business for 3 weeks, completely change your schedule, condense your schedule, make your schedule a bit of a nightmare to go to the Olympics, and then on top of that have to pay for it. And I think that's what it comes down to. So if there's not wiggle room from the IOC and the IIHF, I think there's a chance they don't go. The question that I asked Don Fehr that kind of pushed me in that direction, I said, you know, is the sentiment from the players that you're going to go. You're going to make every possible, like, you're going to do everything you can to go. And he said, no, the sentiment is, all things being equal, we want to go. So that, to me, told me what I needed to know.
Jonas Siegel is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jonas is the national hockey writer for the Canadian Press. Jonas, as part of that conversation you had with Donald Fehr, you asked him about lockouts. And, I mean, it's, you know, terrible to think about, considering the lockout from, you know, 2012 or whatever year it was still fresh in our mind. But did you get any impression in your conversation with Donald Fehr? Did you get any, you know, after speaking with him, did you think there was any way that they're going to avoid a lockout in 2020?
No, I think for sure there will be one. And what reason do we have to think that there won't be, or there won't be some sort of disruption, because every time it happens, like it, and he made the point, and he, this is, you know, his fighting words in some ways, that, you know, in salary cap sports, there's always lockouts, and he'll point to baseball where they don't have a cap and say that they've had labor peace since 1994. Mm-hmm. They haven't had anything. And so we're not close to it. You know, 2019, 2020, we're not in that ballpark yet, but we're getting there. You know, we're getting to the point where a couple of years from now, we're going to start talking about this, and we're going to start talking about what are the things that, you know, the PA is going to fight for. What are the things that the NHL is going to fight for? And I just look at other leagues, and I wonder if the next big thing, or one of the next big things that the NHL fights for, is shorter contracts. Like the NBA has gone to 4 and 5 years. And I asked Donald Fehr about that, you know, and how the players would feel if the NHL pushed for shorter contracts. And he went down a line, you know, as to whether the players would be interested in it. It would have to be something that they'd look at down the line. I asked him about the salary cap, because obviously that's something that kind of overwhelms the sport in many ways and changes the direction of the league. Would the players ever fight to get the salary cap, to get rid of the salary cap? And he said, you know, I can't really say what the membership of the players will be looking at 3-4 years down the road. But I definitely think it's going to happen, unfortunately.
Jonas, back to the World Cup of Hockey for a second. We know that Duncan Keith isn't going to be playing for Team Canada. He's replaced by Jay Bouwmeester. It was announced yesterday that Corey Perry is going to replace Jeff Carter. We know that Jamie Benn has been replaced by Logan Couture. As far as I'm concerned, though, I mentioned this to Drew last week on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, I still think Team Canada is the favorite in this tournament. Do you think it's still Team Canada's tournament to lose? Do you still have concerns about Carey Price's health and maybe that defense not being as good as it would have been if Duncan Keith was there?
I'm with you. I think it's their tournament to lose. I look closely at all the other rosters, and obviously anybody can win. Like, it's such a short tournament, anything can happen. You've got a one-game semifinal. Things can happen that we don't anticipate. You know, the Finnish team, they're young. They've got some exciting talent. I'm not sure they're ready to win yet. The American team, I think, is missing kind of the high-end skill that you would like beyond, you know, a handful of guys like Patrick Kane and whomever else, but, you know, they could obviously use Jack Eichel, Dylan Larkin, guys like that. Team North America, I think they're going to be exciting. I'm not sure that they can win. Like, the only team that I looked at and said, this is a team that potentially, if all things go right, can beat Canada is Sweden. And I still sort of think that, but Canada is just so much better in terms of depth and talent than everybody else, that if they don't win, I think I don't think it's a stretch to say it's a big disappointment. I think it's their tournament to win, just because their depth doesn't compare to anyone else's. They're so much deeper. Their fourth line, whomever it's going to be, is going to be better than most of the top lines on other squads. So I just think there's too much depth. Even if Carey Price isn't ready to go or isn't sharp,
they've got Braden Holtby, and if they don't like Braden Holtby, they can go to Corey Crawford. And, you know, the defense, I think, is really interesting, and I think it's going to be fascinating in the coming days to see how Mike Babcock structures the defense without Duncan Keith. But it's still a pretty deep defense, so I think this is Canada's tournament to lose.
Jonas Siegel is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jonas is the national hockey writer for the Canadian Press. Jonas, sticking with the World Cup of Hockey, you mentioned, you know, that it's, you know, it's not the Olympics. Did you get the impression that all these guys were dropping out of this tournament with, you know, injuries? If this was the Olympics, or this was the stretch drive to the playoffs, or this was a playoff series, how many of these guys do you really think would still be in the lineup as opposed to, you know, taking a step back and withdrawing before this exhibition tournament really gets underway?
I thought about that yesterday. I think if this was the Olympics, we wouldn't see all these guys dropping out. I can't see it. I think in some ways this is indicative of, and I could be wrong, but to me this is indicative of what the World Cup is. It's not the Olympics. You know, players are showing us right now what is more important to them, and what's more important to them is being ready for the start of their NHL team's regular season, not being ready to play in a mostly, like, it's meaningless. Like, it's just it's a made-up tournament. It doesn't have the prestige of the Olympics. So we saw that, you know, a few weeks ago when Jamie Benn, you know, who's recovering from core muscle surgery, said, you know what, I'm not going to be ready to play in the World Cup, but I need to be ready to play for the Dallas Stars. Duncan Keith, same thing. You know, I've got this right knee injury. I need to make sure I'm ready to play for the Blackhawks. So to me, it was really indicative of where the World Cup stands in contrast to the Olympics, because I think if it was the Olympics, and obviously the Olympics come in February, so the timing is a little bit differently, but I think if it was the Olympics, I'm not sure that these guys would drop out. And obviously, again, the timing makes a difference there because this is just before the start of the regular season. But I think players are showing us where, you know, the World Cup stands in the pecking order.
Jonas, you had another really good article. You got to read Jonas's articles. He comes out with a good one every day, it seems like.
Yeah, follow Jonas on Twitter, at Jonas, J-O-N-A-S, Siegel, S-I-E-G-E-L. You can see all of his work there.
Yeah, this article was about the Subban family, and everybody knows who P.K. Subban is. He's one of the best defensemen in the league right now. And then you kind of talked about how this family is going to be known kind of in the same breath as the Stahls. And Jordan Subban, of course, is still trying to make it as a goaltender with the Boston Bruins organization. He's in the AHL right now. But on the topic of P.K. Subban, because that was really the big story of the summer, P.K. Subban being traded to Nashville for Shea Weber, do you think the NHL does a good job of marketing P.K. Subban? Because I've always been a huge P.K. Subban fan, but I think he's almost kind of underappreciated as far as a superstar goes in the NHL. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think he's a victim of the NHL's mentality. The mentality, I don't think it's the NHL. I think it's the mentality inside hockey that individuals, we don't like individuals. We don't like people putting themselves above the team. We don't like people standing out. You know, you're supposed to say the same things after a game. It's about the team. It's not about you. And I think sometimes P.K. Subban gets lumped into this idea that he's too flamboyant. He's too flashy. He's got this goal celebration. He's got, you know, the fashion interests. You know, he's just out there. He's different from the norm. And I think sometimes in sports with the tradition, it's hard to break that. It's hard for people to look at him and see all the good that he does on the ice. And I thought the trade, like you mentioned, this kind of being the summer of Subban, it was in many ways because of that trade. And there was so much, I think, rhetoric on both sides, where you had some people kind of from the old school thinking or mindset looking at Shea Weber and saying, well, he helps you win. You know, he's that kind of guy. He brings leadership. He brings experience. And they look at Subban and they kind of think the opposite. And to me, it goes like, you just need to look at what P.K. Subban does and say, how many guys can do that? And then you look at some of the numbers, and they're almost without compare. Like, the offensive numbers the last three seasons, only Erik Karlsson has more points than P.K. Subban. He is doing so much offensively to help his team that I think all the other stuff needs to kind of be pushed aside, like the character stuff and the team stuff. It's all based on things that we can't really quantify. And I think the NHL is moving in the direction where it's starting to look at numbers and saying, okay, the numbers are more important than what we see. But I'm not sure it's there yet, and I think P.K. Subban was a really good example of that.
Jonas Siegel is the Canadian Press national hockey writer. Jonas, appreciate your time. Are we going to see you here in Winnipeg for the Heritage Classic?
I think I have to. I think I'm in Toronto for what day is the Heritage Classic?
Well, now you're putting me on the spot.
October 22nd and 23rd.
I don't think I'm there, unfortunately.
Ah, we're going to miss
I
you.
I wish.
Yeah, we're going
to
miss you here.
I'm really excited to see the Jets. I think that, like, I was doing a story on kind of teams on the rise that hopefully will come out in October at some point. But the Jets, man, that's going to be one of the more interesting teams to watch. There's so much young talent, as you guys know. So,
well, Jonas, whenever you're in town, let us know, and we'll take you to Bernstein's Deli for an Illegal Curve sandwich.
Sounds good.
Thank you, Jonas. Take care, buddy. Let's head to break. When we come back, the latest on the Jacob Trouba contract negotiations. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Big thanks to Jonas Siegel of the Canadian Press for joining us on the program. In case you missed any of Jonas's interview, it'll be available for download on illegalcurve.com. You can just subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can also check us out on tsn1290.ca. This segment brought to you by our good friends at Bell Acres and Clear Lake Golf Course. Unfortunately, much to, I think, the chagrin of all Winnipeggers, the golf season is beginning to wind down. That being said, there's still plenty of time to get out and enjoy a round of golf or a couple rounds of golf or weeks upon weeks of rounds of golf at Bell Acres and or Clear Lake Golf Course. Check them out, bellacres.com. If you're up in the Riding Mountain National Park area, check out Clear Lake Golf Course. One of the most beautiful courses we do have here in Manitoba with fantastic scenery, of course.
Yeah, Drew, just quickly here, I want to give a shout-out. Before I came to the studio, by the way, my card stopped working, and then I texted you to let me in, and you didn't come, and
well,
you didn't answer
I wasn't
the text.
With my, I wasn't next to my phone. I was chatting with producer Sean in the other room. I didn't have my phone
with me. Well, thank you. And then I had to call Sean, who let me in, but I was waiting out there for 5 minutes.
That's okay. There aren't any bears out there that are going to attack you or anything. You're going to be fine.
Well, let's be honest, bears are afraid of me.
That's
not
true.
The other
bears,
way around.
No, you're as hairy as a bear,
it's,
too.
It's the odor that I emit, Drew.
It's true. It's actually, they find you very romantic, is what it is. You give off a very an aphrodisiac type scent to bears.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thanks to Sean for doing that. But I got to thank the guy who lent me a dollar at the gas station on the way here because I needed some air in my tires. I had to stop off at a gas station on Pembina Highway.
Okay.
My tire was very low.
Hang on. Let me just, before you tell the story, I just want to clarify, you're not panhandling outside of a gas station, are
No,
you?
I was not panhandling.
Okay, thank you.
But my tire was very low, and I stopped off to get some Tim Hortons. I always bring Timbits for the boys.
Uh-huh.
And
when you say boys, you mean yourself.
No, I mean for you and Sean, and if Rory's doing the show, or when Richie used to be here, or when Dave is here.
Okay.
I'm very generous. Uh-huh. I like to supply the curve with Timbits. But anyways, I didn't get the guy's name, but I was going to pay for my Tim Hortons, and I didn't have any money to put in the coins for the air pressure.
Uh-huh.
And the guy lent me a dollar so I could fill up my tires. So I didn't get his name, but thanks.
Random dude.
Dollar
at the gas station.
Dollar guy. Change guy.
Yeah.
That was very nice because I don't want to be driving around with a flat tire, Drew.
I don't blame you. I also think that's a bad phenomenon that we're experiencing now. It used to be that gas stations offered free air pressure for your tires.
Yes.
They never charged you for it or anything.
Some gas stations still do offer free air, but this particular gas station charges a dollar.
That's,
so you have to have Looney or quarters.
That's no good. That's no good. Gas stations of the world, if you want our business, you need to start giving free air. You know, we pay you a lot for the gas, so free air for our tires. I think that's a fair trade.
I think so, but yeah. I mean, thankfully we have a lot of generous people here in Winnipeg.
Uh-huh.
That will kind of pay it forward, so to speak.
Yes. So now you have to go stand outside of a tire pressure refilling station and pay it forward and give somebody else a dollar.
Well, it's funny because I actually ran into you on the side of the street recently, and you actually had a flat tire, and I didn't stop to help you out.
No, that's true, but that's a separate issue altogether. Jets fans, now that, you know, the good news with the Blake Wheeler contract or the captaincy earlier in the week, you know, no surprise, but good news there. Still no progress on Jacob Trouba, and that's what everybody's keeping a very close eye on, especially now that we are into September. Elliot Friedman was on NHL Network television earlier this week, and he spoke about the Trouba contract and how things are unfolding there. This is what Elliot Friedman had to say about the Jacob Trouba contract negotiations with the Winnipeg Jets.
Well, I still think there's some roadblocks there with Trouba. You know, they announced their captains today. It was, you know, three guys there who signed long-term extensions with the team. Wheeler did it 3 years ago, and Bufflin did it last year, and Shifley did it this summer. And I think there's some, you know, I think there's some question about Trouba, too, in this year. I don't know where it's going to go. The one thing I do think is this, and I've been told this, some teams that were trying to potentially talk trade with the Winnipeg for Trouba, you know, when Winnipeg got Packer Bonnie in the draft, they ended up second, it complicated the whole process because Winnipeg at one time was looking for scoring. Well, now they got a tremendous young scorer, a guy who's going to be a stud in this league. So Winnipeg's looking at it and saying, you know, we don't necessarily need that now. So a couple of teams have told me, have said that Winnipeg getting Line A has complicated the entire process of getting a deal done there. I'm not sure where that one's going to go, but Winnipeg, I think, is looking at it and saying, hey, we don't have as many needs now, so if you want to get Jacob Trouba off our hands, it's going to have to be a great offer. We're not just giving him away.
Elliot Friedman on the NHL Network. Your thoughts on Elliot's assertion, two parts, that there's still some roadblocks to be worked out. Hard to believe or a little bit troubling given that it's September 3rd already. And two, that, you know, he talks a lot more there about a potential deal for Jacob Trouba than he does for a potential signing for Jacob Trouba with the Winnipeg Jets. Are we maybe seeing a bit of a shift here, or are you still as confident that Jacob Trouba is going to be sign a contract with the Jets, or do you think the trade possibilities are gaining more steam than they were earlier in the summer?
I thought what was most interesting about what Elliot Friedman said there on the NHL Network was that Patrick Laine has changed things as far as
a potential return on a trade.
Right, and let's be honest here. When the Jets got the second overall pick and drafted Patrick Laine, and when Richie was still on the show, I remember Rich said it. I mean, it really is a game changer. When you have the ability to now put Patrick Laine, who in any other draft year probably would have went first overall.
Sure.
I mean, he probably wouldn't have gone before Connor McDavid or maybe Austin Matthews, but certainly, Drew, it was a no-brainer that the Jets were going to take him to second overall. At least I said all along I thought the Jets were going to take Laine and not Puljujarvi.
Sure.
And then Columbus didn't even take him at third overall. But needless to say, Patrick, back to the Jets and what Elliot Friedman said, I think it does change things because now Patrick Laine almost gives them an instant superstar in the NHL. So they're already stacked at forward with Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele, Nikolai Ehlers, Patrick Laine, you know, on and on and on, Kyle Connor.
Uh-huh.
The Jets have probably, I would say, the best group of young forwards in the NHL. At the very least, top three, right? So we know that the Jets don't need another young forward. And we've said this all along. If Jacob Trouba is going to be traded, which I don't think he will be, I think he will sign a contract with the Winnipeg Jets. At this point, I'm starting to think that it might be a bridge deal, by the way.
Sure.
A couple of months ago, I didn't think that that was going to be a possibility. I didn't think either side wanted that. But I think that when you're talking about Jacob Trouba now, we've heard that he wants 6 years, $6 million a year, right? Uh-huh. He might want more. We said this last week. He wants to be paid like Morgan Rielly. And Morgan Rielly, I think, is the best comparable for Jacob Trouba as far as the contract. And that is essentially what Morgan Rielly signed for. And I think when it comes to the Winnipeg Jets right now, yes, they have to factor in 2 or 3 years down the road. They're going to have to pay Nikolai Ehlers coming off of his entry-level deal and Patrick Laine coming off of his entry-level deal 3 years from now. It's amazing that we're already talking about...
That's what you have to do. It's called salary cap management.
Right, but Laine hasn't even played a game in the NHL. But this is what teams do. They forecast 4 or 5 years down the road, right?
Sure.
So if you're going to be paying Jacob Trouba $6 million a year and you're going to be paying Dustin Byfuglien $6 million a year and you've got Enstrom making $5 million and you've got Myers making, I believe, just under $5 million.
$5.5 million is his cap hit.
$5.5 million, sorry.
Yeah.
So you've got four defensemen now making, I mean, it's going to be the most expensive group of defensemen in the NHL, right?
Sure.
So I still think that they're going to sign him, Drew, but, you know, Elliot Friedman is making some good points there. I mean, they're far away. Jacob Trouba's agent, Kurt Overhart, has asked for a lot. He's asking for a long-term deal. He's asking for big-time money. He's asking for increased usage as far as Jacob Trouba goes. We know that he wants to play on the power play. He wants to play more minutes.
Top 4 minutes,
right?
As opposed to, you know, bottom pairing minutes like he had been with Mark Stewart the last couple of years.
I honestly think it's a stalemate right now. I think that each side has taken their position, mm-hmm. and at this point, they're deadline hunting.
Well, I mean, but the problem is, I mean, what is the deadline? I mean, I think, you know, because I think the Jets' deadline and Jacob Trouba's deadline, Kurt Overhart's deadline, are two different things, because we've seen with Ryan Johansson in Columbus that Kurt Overhart is not afraid to have his client miss an entire training camp, miss regular season games.
I think that would be a huge mistake, by the way, if Jacob Trouba does that.
Well, not if he gets his money at the end of the day. It's probably not a mistake. But, I mean, Kurt Overhart is not, you know, and it's Overhart. I mean, as much as, you know, Trouba could say, yes, I want you to, you know, I want to sign a contract tomorrow, and it could get done. But, you know, for argument's sake, it's really Overhart driving the bus for the most part right now. Overhart is not afraid to play significant hard ball with, you know, for his clients. And we had Aaron Portsline on last week, Aaron Portsline, the Columbus Dispatch. And, of course, they went through the entire negotiation with Ryan Johansson. And that's a negotiation that turned sour and certainly had some emotions involved and had some hurt feelings involved. And now Ryan Johansson plays for the Nashville Predators.
Okay, Ryan Johansson is the example that's always used, right? And it should be, because it's the same agent and he was coming off of his entry level deal, right? So I don't have a problem, Drew, with that example, but look what it did for Ryan Johansson's development in his career. He ended up getting sent down to the AHL after that because he was struggling with the Columbus Blue Jackets. If Jacob Trouba decides to hold out with the Winnipeg Jets, that means that he's going to miss training camp. Sure, he's going to play in the World Cup for Team North America, but that means that he's going to delay the beginning of the season, and he's not going to be game ready, so he's going to enter the lineup not fresh. All of his other teammates are going to have already had the training camp and the preseason and the beginning of the regular season. So sure, he might get his money, but the problem is
bizarre situation this year with the World Cup of Hockey, because he is actually, you know, he is going to be in game shape to some degree, because we know, I mean, he's training in Florida right now. He's on the ice because he is playing in this World Cup of Hockey.
Sure, but when he comes back, let's say he doesn't have a contract. He comes back October 1st, and then he doesn't have a contract.
And so he sits
there, and he watches everybody else prepare for the season.
It's a bizarre situation. It is a very bizarre situation. It's a very unique situation this year, given the World Cup of Hockey and, you know, the deadline, the quote-unquote deadline hunting, and we know that this deadline hunting goes on in the NHL all the time, and that's often the impetus for getting a contract done. The deadline is sort of more wishy-washy this season than it has been in past years as a result of this World Cup of Hockey, and there's so much more uncertainty, I think, surrounding everything than there are in typical RFA negotiations.
I still think there's a good chance that Trouba signs before September 17th.
Before the World Cup of Hockey starts. So that's 2 weeks from today.
I wouldn't, and this is my own personal opinion. This isn't based in any fact.
Right.
Who wants to actually use that or any, anything that I've been told? I don't think that the Jets want to go into the World Cup of Hockey without Trouba signed.
Then if that's the case, and if the Jets are determined, I don't disagree with you, but if the Jets are determined to not go into the World Cup of Hockey or not have the World Cup of Hockey start without having Jacob Trouba's signature on a contract, they might have to give more than they want to give to get that deal done. I mean, it is a bizarre, difficult negotiation that it doesn't seem like there's a ton happening. Now, it could be happening behind the scenes, and both sides are still really radio silence in that you're not hearing anything from Kurt Overhart, you're not hearing anything from Kevin Sheveldayoff, so they're not snipping at each other in the media, which is, I suppose, good for the negotiations, bad for the media. We'd rather have them arguing, because we're, you know, sadists that way. But, you know, it is still it's a professional negotiation still, but you wonder how much longer that's going to last if something doesn't happen.
And again, I said this last week, I'm not saying that the Jets haven't explored trade opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that they have either,
sure,
because everything is speculation at this point, right? But I do think that they probably don't want to let this go till early October, second week of October. I mean, with all of the positive news that the Jets have had with drafting Patrick Laine, Kyle Connor signing, the Heritage Classic and all that, I don't know that they want this Jacob Trouba business hanging over the organization's head in early October when they want to start preparing for the NHL regular season, right? That's all I'm saying. So I do think that even though this has been drawn out and it seems like we've been waiting forever for Jacob Trouba to sign or either be traded, I do think that there might be a resolution in the next couple weeks.
USA Today's Kevin Allen has highlighted his most pivotal players of the upcoming NHL season. We'll talk about them next here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on TSN 1290. 10 minutes before the top of the hour. And welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Now, normally we stick to hockey on this program, but I personally am a huge Minnesota Vikings fan, and I've been in mourning ever since Teddy Bridgewater destroyed his knee earlier in the week. I can announce that the Vikings have made the following trade. From the Philadelphia Eagles, they have acquired quarterback Sam Bradford, a former first overall pick out of Oklahoma. And, of course, he is familiar with Vikings running back Adrian Peterson. They were both at Oklahoma together. So the Minnesota Vikings have acquired quarterback Sam Bradford in exchange for a first-round pick this coming year. So Sam Bradford goes to Minnesota, will likely, I assume, be the starting quarterback for the Vikings in week one as the Vikings, I believe, travel to Tennessee to play the Titans. So the Vikings acquire quarterback Sam Bradford from the Philadelphia Eagles in exchange for a 2017 first-round pick.
When did Adam Schefter take over the Illegal Curve Hockey Show?
Well, this is it's a significant trade for the Minnesota Vikings. It's a first-round pick and a fourth-round pick to the Philadelphia Eagles in exchange for quarterback Sam Bradford, will be the new starting quarterback for the Minnesota Vikings after Teddy Bridgewater tore his ACL and really destroyed his knee in a non-contact drill earlier this week. Sam Bradford, a quarterback who has yet to be able to stay healthy throughout his career in the NFL. The Vikings, who had Super Bowl aspirations entering the season, will now go to Sam Bradford as their answer at quarterback. Bradford and Adrian Peterson familiar with one another through their time at Oklahoma. A huge acquisition for the Minnesota Vikings. I think the team knew that Sean Hill is not a long-term answer for the entire season at quarterback. Sam Bradford, one more time recapping, Sam Bradford to the Minnesota Vikings in exchange for a 2017 first-round pick and a 2017 fourth-round pick. Minnesota Vikings, Sam Bradford, their new starting quarterback.
Let's get to hockey.
Okay, thank you for humoring me there, Ezzie. There's a lot of Vikings fans in the city of Winnipeg who are interested in that news. As I mentioned before the break, Kevin Allen of USA Today, frequent guest on this program, will likely join us during our season preview show again, has highlighted his 10 most pivotal players for the upcoming NHL season. We start with the one at the top of his list. Here are 10 players. Kari Lehtinen of the Dallas Stars is right up at the top of the list. You know, we know how poor the Stars goaltending was last season. Throughout the regular season, they were still able to get to the second round of the playoffs. Do you agree, Kari Lehtinen, if he was able to sort of regain the form that made him a very high first overall pick in the NHL, could be the answer for the Dallas Stars in net as a long-term solution this coming season?
Well, I don't know if he's a long-term solution, Drew, but certainly Jim Nill has made it clear that he's going with Kari Lehtinen and Antti Niemi. I wouldn't be surprised if they split the duties again, Drew. Kari Lehtinen would probably get more starts, I would imagine, but certainly he is going to be a pivotal player for the Dallas Stars, and it's not only, Drew, because he didn't have a good year and certainly didn't have a good playoffs, and neither did Antti Niemi, by the way, but it's because this Dallas Stars defense, I think, even though it's got a lot of talent, and Dan Hamhuis was a great acquisition, and John Klingberg is one of the best young offensive defensemen in the league, and a guy like Esa Lindell, according to Mike Hajka, is a guy that they're really going to, and Johnny Oduya was a great acquisition for them. Needless to say, this Dallas Stars defense, I think, is going to miss Alex Goligoski a lot. They're going to miss Jason Demers. They're going to miss Chris Russell.
They can still get Chris Russell if they want him.
Well, sure.
Chris
Russell is a UFA. You do make a good point, but I think there's a lot of pressure on him because Dallas doesn't have the best group of defensemen. And that's not to take anything away from guys like Steven Johns or Patrick Nemeth or Jordy Benn, the guys that they have kind of playing that 5-6-7 role. But if you look at other teams, for example, St. Louis or Chicago, or you look at some of the better defensive teams, Anaheim, for example, I don't think Dallas is in that same category. And Florida I would put up there as well. So I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on Lehtinen because he doesn't have a stellar defense in front of him. It's more offensive-oriented, Drew.
Mm-hmm.
And Sir Dan Hamhuis is going to help that. He's more of a defensive-minded defenseman. But, yeah, I think there is going to be a lot of pressure on Kari Lehtinen, and that's why we talked about this after the NHL regular season going into the playoffs, that was going to be an issue for them. And then after they got knocked out of the playoffs, we thought maybe the Dallas Stars were going to go after Marc-Andre Fleury or Brian Elliott, or maybe they were going to try to make a trade for Ben Bishop. So absolutely, there's a lot of pressure on Kari Lehtinen. He's an excellent goalie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's maybe the goalie that he was 4 or 5 years ago, but I still think he's an NHL goalie. And I think with Dallas, Drew, is they score 4 or 5 goals a game, right? So he doesn't necessarily have to get a shutout every game, but they need him to be better, especially when it comes to the playoffs, because this year he wasn't very good.
You don't often see a 37-year-old defenseman as one of the most pivotal players potentially for the upcoming season. Kevin Allen highlights Brian Campbell back with the Chicago Blackhawks as being pivotal to the Blackhawks team for the upcoming season. Quote, he can do for the Blackhawks defense what Johnny Oduya did before he jumped to the Dallas Stars. Brian Campbell has the potential to make the Blackhawks whole again. Your thoughts on that comment from Kevin Allen?
Yeah, you know what's amazing about Brian Campbell? He doesn't miss a lot of games. The last 4 years, 5 years, he hasn't missed a single game. He's an Iron Man. And even at 37 years old, he still had 31 points last year. I mean, this guy is absolutely going to be a key part of what the Chicago Blackhawks are doing. When they lost Johnny Oduya to Dallas, they tried to replace him with the likes of Trevor Van Riemsdyk, and they even had Trevor Daly in there as well, and they didn't work out. Brian Campbell is still, at his age, a very good defenseman. Might not be as fast as he once was, but he's still a guy that can play power play. So, absolutely, Drew, he deserves to be on this list because we know that Chicago have the forwards. I mean, they're bringing back the same guys, Taves, Kane, Hossa, Artemi Panarin, guys like this. So, really, they need that fourth defenseman because we know Keith Seabrook and Hjalmarsson are going to be there. Mm-hmm. They've been there for many years now. They've been looking for that replacement for Johnny Oduya. So we know Brian Campbell took less money to sign with Chicago. Florida offered him more money. So absolutely, Brian Campbell is going to be one of those pivotal players, especially when you get into the playoffs. Because we know Chicago is either going to win the Central Division or they're going to finish second. They're making the playoffs.
Sure.
But when it comes to getting into the playoffs, you have a guy like Brian Campbell, who you forget has 103 games of playoff experience. You need those guys there.
One last one. We encourage you to read Kevin Allen's entire article. I'll tweet it out. One last one. I like this one. Brian Elliott, now of the Calgary Flames. Last season, this is his comment. Last season, the Flames owned an .892 save percentage, while Brian Elliott posted a .930 save percentage. He was brought in to stabilize the back end. I like that one. Brian Elliott, you know, in the Calgary Flames are sort of a bit of a dark horse. Had a lousy year last year. Goaltending, a big problem there. Assuming they get Johnny Gaudreau under contract, we know they got Sean Monahan under contract a couple weeks ago. I like that Flames team if they get the goaltending that they so sorely missed last season.
Yeah, absolutely. That was one of the best trades, I thought, of the offseason. Happened right at the draft, right in and around the draft. Jonas Hiller and Kari Rammo weren't good for the Flames last year, so Brian Elliott, who's coming off his best playoff performance ever. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was really good for St. Louis in the playoffs, and they've decided to go with Jake Allen, who's younger, and that's fine. But I think that was a very savvy signing by Brad Treliving, and I think the Calgary Flames are a good shot of making the playoffs this year. They weren't very good last year, but when you look at that defense, if Mark Giordano's healthy, TJ Brody's healthy, Dougie Hamilton is coming off an underrated year, I thought, in my opinion. That defense is really good. And Brian Elliott, I wouldn't expect his save percentage necessarily to be that high because that was playing under Ken Hitchcock for one of the best defensive teams.
Yeah.
But certainly it'll be better than .893 or whatever it was last year. I would expect his save percentage to be more like .915, .920 this year. But needless to say, Brian Elliott is a bona fide number one goaltender. That's what they needed.
Let's head to break. When we come back, Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News joins us. We'll talk about the Buffalo Sabres. Mike's also covering Team North America at the upcoming World Cup of Hockey. Lots more to come. 1 hour down, 1 hour to go. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel and Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend Mike Harrington. Mike is a columnist with the Buffalo News. He, of course, covers the Sabres and is also covering Team North America at the upcoming World Cup of Hockey. Mike, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey guys, I drew the good role on the schedule this year. I always love coming to the Peg, but think of it this way: I've got Edmonton, Calgary, Vancouver, the Peg, and Minnesota all done by November 1st this year. So I'm stoked about that.
You don't even need a parka. You know.
How about no parkas? They barely need a sweater, right?
Exactly. It's going to be it's going to be shorts and t-shirt weather in November in Winnipeg as it usually is, right?
How about that? I'm ready for that one. I deserve it. I've had a couple issues in the past,
yeah.
So I got a good roll of the dice.
We all remember the quest for the Peg. What was that, 2 years ago now, Mike, where I think it took you about...
That was three. Last year was the frozen water bottle in the rental car.
Oh, that's right. That's right. And then didn't you have to drive to Minnesota? And it was a disaster a couple of years ago. Anyways, we're glad that you're going to be able to join us here in the much more seasonal November temperatures. Hopefully we'll keep that going for the next couple of years. Thanks for joining us this morning, Mike. How's the off season been? Everything you're sort of getting ready, getting back into the hockey swing of things right now?
Yeah, I mean, I'm getting on the plane tomorrow to go to Montreal to get ready for Team North America camp Monday morning at 11. Certainly, my attention is focused on Jack Eichel, but it's a big story in the hockey world in general, seeing what's going to happen with Eichel, Connor McDavid, Austin Matthews, Aaron Ekblad, all on the same team. There's a huge curiosity factor to it all.
Well, let's start with Jack Eichel. You mentioned him. Of course, he was the second overall pick of the Sabres last season. He's going to play for Team North America. Now that he's got the rookie season sort of out of the way, are the expectations, the Sabres internal organization expectations, different for Jack Eichel this year than they were last year? Are they expecting more from him than they did? Not that he had a bad year last year by any stretch of the imagination, but are they expecting him to sort of take another step forward now that he's got a new year under his belt?
Yeah, they really are. They understand that guys physically mature in their second season quite a bit. And I think one thing they learned last year is Jack Eichel hit that rookie wall around Christmas, went home, was a different player when he came back, and he understands now what it's going to take to play 81, 82 games of a season. And he knew that would be an issue, and he had to go through it once to learn about it. And I think he was a much better player in the second half of the season. He understood that you cannot score a goal every shift in the National Hockey League, and that sometimes you have to do other things in the game. You have to win a faceoff. You have to win some puck battles in your defensive zone. It's not all about scoring goals, and that's something, top-notch players have to learn early in their careers. And I think he took a big step in that area last year, and they really expect him to be a top-notch number one 200-foot center this year.
Mike, speaking of taking a big step forward, Rasmus Ristolainen had a very underrated year in Buffalo, I thought. He had 41 points. He was top 10 in the NHL in ice time as far as defensemen go. I think overall he was top 10 in ice time. He still doesn't have a contract. He's coming off of his entry-level deal. He's going to play for Team Finland at the World Cup of Hockey. What's the latest on the Rasmus Ristolainen contract negotiations? Because to me, it looks kind of similar to what's going on in Winnipeg with Jacob Trouba and the Winnipeg Jets.
Well, it does, on the surface, look the same. I think there's more of a disconnect with Trouba and the Jets than there is with Ristolainen in Buffalo. He said in Finland last week that he doesn't expect it to be a problem, but he doesn't expect to be signed before the World Cup either. So I know he's got insurance going into that tournament. And you're looking at, I would assume a 5 or 6 year deal. You look at the numbers Olli Maatta got in Pittsburgh, and there's been a couple other deals signed. They look at him as their number one defenseman. They're going to cut back on his minutes this year. I don't think they want him to be that 27, 28 minute a game guy. Get to that 23, 24 minute area. Some of his numbers last year, especially his analytics, people feel were a little skewed playing with Josh Georges, and I think they're going to put him with Dmitry Kulikov this year. They acquired from Florida, who was very good in the playoffs against the Islanders, and I think they feel that will help Ristolainen as well. But you're right, now he's looking at year four. He's probably going to have a big money contract. He's going to be the number one guy they have to build around. And the comparisons to Victor Hedman, we've heard quite a bit over the years. We need to start seeing more of that on the ice from him.
Mike Harrington is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mike covers the Buffalo Sabres for the Buffalo News. He's also on his way to Montreal to cover Team North America at the upcoming World Cup of Hockey. Mike, before we shift the focus to the Team North America, Kyle Okposo, he was the big free agent signing for the Sabres back right around July 1st. He gets a $6 million a year cap hit to be with the Sabres. Number one right winger, obviously. Are they expecting sweet music between Jack Eichel and Kyle Okposo for many years to come?
Well, it's going to be interesting to see where they put him. I think right now you might start the season with Kyle Okposo on the wing with Ryan O'Reilly at center, and Evander Kane on the other side. Eichel would be with Reinhardt and potentially Tyler Ennis if he's healthy. So they've got some work to do on their lines in the preseason. But the thing about Okposo is they certainly like his playmaking ability. They like his leadership. He's more of a veteran. And think of it this way, the mentality of the Buffalo Sabres guys this offseason. They got one of the four interviews with the number one free agent on the market, Steven Stamkos. They signed the number one free agent forward after Stamkos in Kyle Okposo. And they were in and had the rights to the number one college free agent in Jimmy Vesey. So it's not really the wasteland of the NHL that it once was. And, you know, that really changes even more when you start winning games. But they're getting in on players, and Kyle Okposo was a big signing for them, and they really expect that he's going to help. And, you know, people who say he got a lot of his points with John Tavares really have to look at the numbers, because most of the time last year he was playing with Franz Nielsen, and he still had a good year in Brooklyn.
You mentioned Jimmy Vesey, Mike. I wanted to ask you about him. What was the level of disappointment like in the Sabres organization that they were unable to come to an agreement with him? It did cost them that, I believe it was a third-round pick just to acquire his negotiation rights. They figure now, you know, hindsight being 20/20, was that pick worth it, you know, just to be able to talk to him for the couple months that they were able to?
Absolutely. They had four third-round picks that got them to the front of the line. I think they thought they could convince him to come with the Eichel connection. I think they were surprised how resolute he was in going UFA August 15th, but it just became a big circus. And, you know, I'm still a little confused by his choice of the New York Rangers. I really thought he was going to go to Boston. I thought the Blackhawks were going to talk him into coming there. You really want to stay in the Northeast. I think Jimmy Vesey saw stars with a lot of the tweets he got from celebrities and other athletes and the whole New York thing, because New York Rangers don't strike me as a team going places. Or, you know, they've got some young forwards, but they got questionable defense. They got a 35-year-old goalie, as great as he still is. It was a weird choice. So we're going to see how that plays out. But people in Buffalo were getting pretty sick of Jimmy Vesey, and I think the front office understood. They took their shot. It didn't work out. I have no problem with that.
Mike, you mentioned that you're heading to Montreal to cover Team North America at the World Cup of Hockey here, and I guess we talked about it in the first hour. Team North America certainly got many stars. They've got three Jets in Trouba, Scheifele, and Connor Hellebuyck. We talked about Jack Eichel earlier throwing Connor McDavid and Auston Matthews and many others. In your opinion, is the biggest challenge that Team North America and Todd McClellan and his coaching staff are going to be facing is just getting this young group of forwards together so quickly and getting them to buy in to a system that's going to allow them to be successful at the World Cup?
Well, yeah, and some of these experienced guys who play in these international tournaments learn what it's like to play on the third and fourth line. These young players have been stars their whole lives. Somebody's going to be on the third and fourth line for Team North America, and I read a quote the other day from Todd McClellan. One of the things they're going to have to learn is we're going to go on the power play, and 20 guys are going to want to jump over the boards. Well, it's not going to be that way with Team North America, so there's going to be a pecking order here. Training camp's going to be very interesting to see where that pecking order lands, and you're going to be surprised at who might end up on the third or fourth line or who sees no power play time, and it's going to be a shock to some of these guys, and they're going to have to learn to play roles. And these are guys who've never played roles before. So it's going to be interesting to see in three exhibition games, and I think it's seven practices, how ready they are to start a tournament and how ready they are to become a team.
Mike, if just as, you know, sorry, Drew, if Team North America, I mean, I think everybody would agree that Canada, the U.S., Sweden, Finland are probably favorites to win this tournament, and Team North America would probably be that sleeper pick to maybe get to the finals or get to the semifinals, Mike. But if Team North America doesn't make it, and let's say they lose every single game or they only win one game, is anyone going to care?
Well, I think people are going to be surprised if they do really well, if they get deep in the tournament, but I think it's a novelty factor. I think a lot of people who call this tournament a cash grab are missing the point. This is a promotional vehicle for hockey, and I want to see Connor McDavid and Johnny Gaudreau and Trouba and Scheifele and Eichel play, and if they weren't going to make Team USA or Team Canada for the most part, and this is a chance to get them on the ice in this tournament, I think it's a great idea.
You know, to your point there, Mike, about the, you know, the chemistry and everything needing to develop, can you, the flip side to that, is it maybe that the precociousness of Team North America, their youth, their sort of maybe devil-may-care attitude, it could be a bit of an asset for them entering this sort of quick, shortened tournament?
Yeah, but I think most of these guys feel, most people think they're going to go 0-3. And I know I have not talked to them yet. I'll see him Monday, but I know Jack Eichel loves playing with a chip on his shoulder like that, where people don't think he's going to do anything. So I think right now they're going to go in thinking, we're going to finish 0-3, we're going to prove some people wrong. I think the precociousness, to use your term, is a great way to put it. I think they're going to love that theory.
Mike, we'll let you go on this last question. You know, by law, speaking with the Winnipeg radio station, we have to ask you about Mr. Evander Kane. How many of his, you know, quote-unquote nine lives would he have used up as a member of the Buffalo Sabres, given some of the off-ice shenanigans he finds himself in?
How many lives has Evander Kane used up? I'd say 9.5.
There's frustration within the organization, is it safe to say?
And don't forget, guys, when he had the issue here in June, he did it on the Thursday night, the night before the draft. The entire league was in Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
He was brought into town to do a youth clinic to be the Sabres representative. The organization was furious with him for finding trouble at 3:11 a.m. at Bottoms Up, a bar in Buffalo. And we're going to see. He's going to be back in court next week and see how this goes. But I think he's on last legs in this organization, and there cannot be any more missteps, because it's just a public relations disaster at this point, and they're going to play it out this year and, you know, see what they can do with him after this season, see if he reestablishes any value to his contract at all.
How the Bills going to do this year, Mike?
6-10, 5-11, sweep it all out, coach, GM, everybody, fire everybody when the season's over.
Hold on. More importantly, Mike, are the Jays going to win the AL East?
Yeah, no problem. I can't guarantee the World Series. They're winning these.
Well, if the Bills clear everyone out, we know that a former Sabres coach has told you that you can coach, so maybe you can go coach the Bills after that.
I don't do football. I barely do hockey. But, you know, I should have brought the whistle. If we were in Winnipeg that day, I should have brought the whistle to Wendy and say I was reporting for duty.
There you go. Mike Harrington is a columnist with the Buffalo News. You can read his fine work at thebuffalonews.com. Mike, thanks very much for joining us this morning.
All right, gentlemen, take care.
Take care, Mike.
Cheers, Mike.
Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we talk about Carolina Hurricanes general manager Ron Francis. Thank you to Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News. Big thank you to Jonas Siegel of the Canadian Press before him. If you missed either of those interviews, we'll have the entire show available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and of course on our website, illegalcurve.com. Want to mention a big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Keener Jerseys, and Bell Acres and Clear Lake Golf Course. If it wasn't for those fine companies, this show wouldn't be able to be brought to you each and every week. So support them if you want to support Illegal Curve. It's 20 minutes past 10 in the morning, and there was a general manager, that's general manager Ron Francis of the Carolina Hurricanes. He got a contract extension earlier in the week to be the general manager of the Hurricanes through 2019. Here's Ron Francis speaking about his contract extension.
I'm very much excited about it. Appreciate the fact that he was willing to give me the extension. I think we're, as a management team and coaching staff and organization, we're going in the right direction. So it's exciting to have the opportunity to continue that and see it get better and better as we move forward.
So Francis gets the extension. I don't think it came as a surprise to anyone. I think most people would say that for a Hurricanes team that was pretty close to rock bottom, he's done a good job in building them back up over the last number of years. Not yet a playoff team, but they exceeded everyone's expectations last season. And I think a lot of people maybe are looking at them as a team that could challenge for a playoff spot in the Eastern Conference this coming season. A lot of young talent, particularly on the back end. So first I want to talk about Ron Francis, and then we'll get to the controversial player tryout agreement that they signed earlier in the week as well. So Ron Francis is a general manager. You're happy? You think that he's done a good job so far? Sort of under the radar, the Hurricanes are a team that don't get a ton of attention playing over in Raleigh, a non-traditional hockey market, and despite being the Jets' former Southeast Division rival, nobody really pays much attention to the Hurricanes right now, especially here in Winnipeg.
Yeah, I would say, Drew, that Ron Francis has done an excellent job with the Carolina Hurricanes. As you mentioned, last year, nobody was expecting this team to do anything, and the Carolina Hurricanes were actually a very competitive team. And I think he's had a pretty successful offseason. We know that he signed former Winnipeg Jet Lee Stempniak. He made a move with the Chicago Blackhawks to acquire Brian Bickell and Teuvo Teravainen.
Mm-hmm.
When you're talking about Teuvo Teravainen, it's former first-round pick. He's a guy that can easily play in your top six, and maybe in Chicago he wasn't able to play in the top six just because they have an embarrassment of riches there. But needless to say, a guy like Tara Vinen becomes one of the Hurricanes' best young forwards, best forwards, period, I would say. But when you're talking about the Carolina Hurricanes, Drew, the big trade was moving on from Eric Staal, right? Eric Staal was traded to the New York Rangers, and of course he didn't re-sign with the New York Rangers, but Eric Staal was there for many years on a sinking ship.
Yeah.
And they traded Eric Staal before the trade deadline, and now they're moving on. And you mentioned their defense, and that is really where they are the strongest. And we know that Noah Hanifin was a top pick a couple of years ago in the first round, but it was really Slavin to me, Jacob Slavin, who was really the most impressive. And Justin Falk, of course, is under contract for many years. He's one of the best offensive defensemen in the NHL, and you've still got guys like Ron Hainsey there. But needless to say, you've got guys like Hayden Fleury coming up through the system. They're very stocked on defense.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly not a team that I would say is a Stanley Cup contender yet,
sure,
but they've certainly reached a very competitive status right now. And when you're talking about a guy like Ron Francis, we know this guy's been part of the organization since his playing days with the Hartford Whalers, Drew.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of uncertainty still around this franchise with Peter Karmanos looking for a minority owner or a majority owner. So this team is still, I think, has a lot of work to do. And they've had attendance issues over the years. But certainly Ron Francis brings that stability, Drew. And we know he's a Hall of Fame player, but he's made some very savvy moves. And, you know, you have a guy like Sebastian Aho that's going to be coming up through the system now. And he's most likely going to play for the Carolina Hurricanes this year. Elias Lindholm is a very underrated center, in my opinion. This is a respectable team now. They've been a bit of the laughingstock of the NHL, let's be honest. I'm not saying that the organization has been, but their play on the ice. The Hurricanes have been very bad for a long time now. It's been 10 years since they won the Stanley Cup in 2006, right?
Sure.
They haven't really had that much on-ice success since then. How many times have they made the playoffs since then? I don't even know if they have.
Maybe once? Yeah,
twice?
If that. I don't think so. I don't recall, to be perfectly honest. They certainly haven't won a playoff series in almost a decade.
And maybe I shouldn't use the word laughingstock. Maybe that's a little disrespectful. But certainly they have not been a very good team for a long time now. And I think that's one of the reasons why they traded Eric Staal. They realized, okay, let's get some draft picks. Let's move on here. But needless to say, signing Ron Francis to a contract extension was certainly a no-brainer, as you mentioned, Drew. And when it comes now to, I know you want to get into Rafi Torres here.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea why they signed Rafi Torres.
Well, here's Luke DeCock. Luke DeCock is a columnist with the Raleigh News and Observer. He covers the Carolina Hurricanes. This is from his column the same day, August 30th. This is from his column the same day they announced the Ron Francis contract extension. Quote, "The Hurricanes extended a training camp tryout not to an honest, genuine player who might help the team, that being the Hurricanes, or at least deserves a chance to show other NHL teams what he can do, but to as dirty a dirtbag who ever scrambled an NHL player's eggs, Rafi Torres." I can't disagree with Luke DeCock. I just don't understand what teams are seeing in Rafi Torres. He was suspended last year for 41 games after another headhunting incident in the exhibition season, yet, and there's no guarantee he's going to make the team, and I'd be surprised if he does make the Hurricanes. But why can't Rafi Torres' career end? I mean, it should have ended, and yet he's a cockroach who constantly survives year after year, at least to get a training camp tryout, which is bizarre to me that the Hurricanes would bring him in even to see what he has to offer. I mean, he's not doing anything on the ice anymore, unless your goal is to try and injure an opponent.
I don't think they're bringing him in to see what he has to offer. They know what Rafi Torres is all about, Drew. He's been in the NHL for a dozen years now. In my opinion, the Carolina Hurricanes are bringing him in here for insurance, and they want him out there with some of their young players. That's the only thing that I can think about. We should also mention that Rafi Torres does have a previous history with the organization. So Rafi Torres is a guy that I think at this point in his career doesn't have much to offer, Drew.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, let's be honest, Rafi Torres has had the chances to redeem himself. I don't think he's been an effective NHLer for probably about 5 years now.
Sure, well, he's been suspended most of the time, but you're absolutely right. He hasn't had anything to offer. it's interesting to note, as Decock does in his article, as Luke Decock does, that Rafi Torres is represented by the same agency that represented Ron Francis in his playing days. So I wonder if there's a bit of a quid pro quo taking place where, you know, Francis is doing a favor for, you know, the agents, you know, for the agency that represented him back in the day. But I just don't see any advantage for bringing Rafi Torres into your organization whatsoever. I mean, he's not bringing anything on the ice. And Ron Francis, when he's asked about it, even, you know, says that I'm not, you know, more or less, if you read between the lines, says, I don't really know why we're bringing Rafi Torres in. Here's the quote.
It's a PTO, though. We have to be clear, though, that Rafi Torres was not offered a three-year contract. This is a PTO. It's possible that he plays in the AHL this year. It's possible that he doesn't play at all.
You're absolutely right. Valid point. And here's Ron Francis. Quote, you all know the way I played the game. I don't condone those kind of hits, and I think they were dealt with the right way in regards to the league. And he's served his time, and he's forfeited his money. He, of course, being Rafi Torres. Hopefully, he's in a different place here moving forward. You know, whether he is or he isn't, let's say he's a choir boy. He doesn't really help you on the ice.
By the way, Drew, I should clarify, Rafi Torres hasn't played for Carolina before. I was thinking that after Edmonton, he played with Carolina. It was actually Columbus who he played for, so I should just put that out there.
But I believe he played against Carolina in that 2006 Stanley Cup final.
Right, and you mentioned they have the connection with Ron Francis there. But needless to say, I think the point that Luke Decock of the Raleigh News and Observer was trying to make is that the Carolina Hurricanes have made so many good moves, they're going in the right direction, right?
Sure.
They've gone out and they've acquired Brian Bickell and Teuvo Teravainen. They've gone out and they've acquired a guy like Lee Stempniak. They've drafted well.
Mm-hmm.
Jake Bean is another guy who they drafted 13th overall.
Jake Bean, Julian Gauthier, they also drafted those. They had two first-round picks this past draft.
And Noah Hanifin, I mean, he's looking like a stud on defense. So the point that Luke Decock was trying to make is, everything is going in the right direction. Why are you signing a guy who's got a terrible reputation? Like, as far as I'm concerned, I'd love to have a guy like Rafi Torres on my team. He's tough. But at this point, it's not about toughness.
Maybe,
it's about that he's a liability on the ice.
5 to 7 years ago, you would have loved to have Rafi Torres. But, I mean, he hasn't done anything on the ice. He's been nothing but a reckless player since then who draws negative attention to your organization.
And that's the point, right? Like, sure, if Rafi Torres is out there in the preseason and maybe even the regular season, he's protecting some of the younger guys, fine. But do you want that negative energy around your locker room?
I wouldn't. I think that, you know, that is Luke DeCock's point, is it's one step forward. You sign Francis, you give Bill Peters a contract extension, your young players seem to be panning out, and then it's a step back in bringing in Rafi Torres. Even if it's just a PTO, you know the scrutiny that's going to be on your organization simply for making the move.
I'd agree with that.
Let's go to break. When we come back, World Cup of Hockey news. Lots of different countries have had injuries. Canada, we talk about their latest injury next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. 10:30 in the morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Le Burger Week underway, of course. Ezzy, how many times have you been to Bernstein's Deli already for their super delicious fried chicken burger?
Well,
it's only been available for 2 days. It's sold out each and every day. So
yep.
We do recommend that if you want it, you do want it. I can assure you of that. You should just go to Bernstein's right now. Fried chicken is a perfectly acceptable thing to eat in the morning. It's a southern delicacy that they often eat in the morning on a biscuit. I've had it before. I recommend it. Go to Bernstein's. Have it right now. Ezzy, how many times have you been there already? How many burgers have you had?
Well, including the taste test that I had that we aired last weekend, I've had two.
Okay.
And I was there Thursday night, the first day of Le Burger Week, when they officially sold out. And it was funny, actually, because...
Were you just hanging out there, just making sure
I was there to have the burger.
Oh, you were there eating the burger.
Okay. I was there, and a group of four people came in, and they just sold out. This is around 8:30, 9 o'clock, because Bernstein's, of course, is open till 10 on Thursdays.
And Fridays and Saturdays.
And Fridays and Saturdays tonight, of course. And people were very disappointed. And as you mentioned, they sold out yesterday. So after the show, I'm going to go have my third Bernstein's Deli burger. But I've actually had, Drew, four now.
Mm-hmm.
In 2 days, four burgers total, because I've been going to other restaurants and having burgers. Le Burger Week is just fantastic.
Right. So we do recommend the super delicious fried chicken burger at Bernstein's.
It is
Deli.
Really good. I mean, if you listened to the show last week, you heard us sampling it.
Well,
but
heard you sampling it.
I mean, they're killing it. I talked to Aaron yesterday, and they're just ecstatic with with the success of this burger. And it's going to be available, of course, for another 5 days.
Sure.
So it's been awesome. So I just think Le Burger Week, just generally speaking, is great for the city of Winnipeg.
Yeah, it's a fun sort of activity for people to eat too much food. But we do recommend the super delicious fried chicken burger at Bernstein's Deli. And just so I can antagonize Ezzy a little bit, one more time, in case you missed the news earlier in the program, the Minnesota Vikings have acquired quarterback Sam Bradford from the Philadelphia Eagles in exchange for a 2017 first-round draft pick and a conditional fourth-round draft pick in 2018. So Sam Bradford will be the Vikings' starting quarterback going forward after the Vikings lost Teddy Bridgewater to a terrible knee injury earlier in the week. So just again, Sam Bradford to the Minnesota Vikings, as I know it bothers Ezzy that I'm talking about football during a hockey show.
Well, it doesn't bother me. I go to a Vikings game at least once a year, so I'm a Vikings fan as well, and I think people in Winnipeg want to hear about it, but I definitely want to get to some more hockey.
That's fine. We'll get to some more hockey. Jim Toth going to come up and join us, the new host of the morning show, the big show here on TSN 1290. Jim's a big Bears fan, if I'm not mistaken, so we'll talk about him. We'll talk about Jay Cutler. We can talk about the Chicago Bears with Jim. He's going to join us at 10:45 this morning. So we'll wrap up the show talking to the new Matt Leibel, Jim Toth.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. We'll talk to Jim about this, but Jim is known for his beautiful hair.
He's got beautiful hair. He does have beautiful hair.
And I think it's fitting that Matt Leibel, who also has beautiful hair. Yeah. By the way, Matty Leibel's rocking the man bun these days.
Yeah, I got to say, you know, he puts it into a man bun for baseball, for softball. And
by the way, congratulations on winning the Jewish slow pitch
championship.
Thank
you. I was waiting. It's
House of Ashkenazi.
10:35. I was waiting for you to give us props for the House of Ashkenazi winning the Jewish men's slow pitch league yet again this year.
Third time in five years.
A dynasty if there ever was one.
And didn't you have four grand slams?
Four grand slam. I actually had four grand slam breakfasts at Denny's is what I had. I went to Denny's and celebrated with four grand slam breakfasts. But anyways, you were mentioning Leibel rocking the man bun. And fortunately, he can no longer defend himself.
I have a feeling with your Sam Bradford news, there's going to be no hockey news this segment.
No, we'll talk about the hockey news coming up. But Leibel's, you know, rocking the man bun just like Josh Donaldson, that's where the similarities begin and end, let me tell you. That's about as Josh Donaldson as he gets is the man bun.
To be the host of the big show, you have to have fantastic hair.
Fantastic hair. Now, I wonder if Jimmy's going to grow a big beard like Maddie also has. So that's
I don't know if he'll grow a beard. But Jimmy Toth rocks a beautiful mustache every November.
Every November,
I compliment him on his mustache. It's beautiful.
That is very true as well. Anyways, let's get into the World Cup of Hockey news.
I want to talk more about Jim Toth.
Well, we'll talk to Jim Toth coming up in about 10 minutes' time. Canada loses yet another player, Jeff Carter, out for Team Canada.
Yep.
Corey Perry back in for Team Canada. You know, your thoughts on this replacement. Is it a downgrade from Carter to Perry?
No.
No, not at all.
Well, they're different players. I mean, Corey Perry is much more physical than Jeff Carter, who's more of a pure sniper, but they're both snipers.
Right.
I mean, these are both perennial 30, 35-goal guys. When you're talking about Jeff Carter, he's got a 40-goal season. Corey Perry's got a 50-goal season under his belt. But it's funny. This shows you how much depth that this organization has, Team Canada, that is.
Mm-hmm.
The country has, I should say. You know, you look at Jeff Carter, he can play center, he can play wing. Corey Perry, of course, is a pure right winger. So when you're talking about Perry, we know that he's not going to be play center, and Jeff Carter was probably going to play wing, I think, as well, when you consider how many good centers that the team has. Sidney Crosby, John Tavares, Patrice Bergeron.
Jonathan Taves,
on and on, right? Team Canada, I think, is going to win this tournament. I mean, you're talking about, you know, a team that I don't think has any weaknesses. Even if Carey Price isn't 100%, as Jonas Siegel mentioned last hour, they put in Braden Holtby, or they put in Corey Crawford. Duncan Keith can't play, you put in Jay Bouwmeester. Jamie Benn can't go, put Logan Couture in. He just led the playoffs in scoring. The fact that Team Canada didn't have Logan Couture on the team and he just led the playoffs in scoring shows you how much depth they have. We say this every year. Canada could have two teams in these tournaments, right?
Sure.
Still the best hockey nation in the world as far as I'm concerned. So I have absolutely no concerns that Corey Perry won't be able to replace Jeff Carter. And I think it's funny because both of those guys played on Team Canada in 2005 at the World Junior Championships in Grand Forks. I still think that was the best Canadian team ever
in that
tournament. And if you look at all the other players that are in the tournament, Crosby, Bergeron, the list goes on and on and on. Yeah. How many guys from that team? Getzlaff.
Taves.
Taves was after that.
Was he after that?
He was drafted in 2006.
Right, sorry, okay.
But needless to say, I mean, the pipeline of talent is fantastic in Canada, even though I think countries like the U.S., Finland, Sweden have caught up, especially this year with Lion A and Puljujarvi being drafted. I think we've seen an explosion of Finnish talent, especially at forward. Mm-hmm. But I still think Canada, I mean, P.K. Subban's still not on the team. Yeah. You could make a strong argument that P.K. Subban should be on defense. You could make a strong argument that Chris Letang should be on this team.
There's plenty of, you know, like you said, the drop-off. Only Canada can make that seamless of a replacement.
Right.
Other teams have lost players this week. Team North America was announced late yesterday. Sean Monahan not going to participate for Team North America. Vincent Trocheck of the Florida Panthers is in for him, for Monahan.
Vincent Trocheck's a great player. Had a breakthrough season last year with the Florida Panthers and then had some injury problems. But, I mean, look, Team North America is certainly not short on offensive talent. And they've got a good young group of defensemen there. Aaron Ekblad, Shane Gostisbehere, Jacob Trouba, of course, Morgan Riley. The list goes on and on and on. To me, they just don't have that international experience at the senior level that teams like Canada and Sweden are going to have. They're certainly going to be a fun team to watch. So Vincent Trocheck, good for him. He makes Team North America. He deserves it. Unfortunately, you know, Flames fans aren't going to be able to watch Sean Monahan. But
I think Flames fans would rather have a healthy Sean Monahan for the start of the regular season than have a, you know, they'll handle the heartache of not watching him at the World Cup of Hockey instead.
And Flames fans probably want Johnny Gaudreau to be signed before the World Cup of Hockey starts. But needless to say, these guys are insured and they can go play. But I mean, North America, I think it'll be a surprise if they win this tournament.
Yeah.
But certainly it won't be a surprise to me if they win a few games.
This one was a little bizarre. Henrik Zetterberg, just after being announced as the captain of Team Sweden, is out of the tournament for Team Sweden. Mikael Backlund of the Calgary Flames replaces him. I mean, Zetterberg, obviously a veteran leader for a Swedish team that has always been a perennial contender at these kind of international tournaments. A little bit odd that he gets announced as the captain and then, you know, within a week or so is no longer on the team, is you know, scratched in exchange for Backlund.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate for Henrik Zetterberg, and it's really unfortunate for the Red Wings that now Zetterberg isn't going to play in the World Cup of Hockey, and they lost Pavel Datsyuk to Russia after the playoffs ended last year. But I mean, it's, to me, Drew, it's that defense, and Sweden's defense, with the exception of Canada, I think is the best in the tournament. I think you would agree with that when you're talking about Erik Karlsson and Victor Hedman and Hampus Lindholm. The list goes on and on. Oliver Ekman-Larsson. I mean, this group of Anton Strahlman, I could go on and on. I think I just named most of their defensemen.
Yeah.
But this group of defensemen for Sweden is elite. I think you can make the argument it's better than Canada's. I wouldn't. But certainly it's not that far behind Canada.
And they're still without Nicholas Cronwall, is not going to play. And Johnny Klingberg, a guy who has been fantastic for the Dallas Stars, still hasn't made that team.
They've got a lot of depth. And, yeah. I mean, you've still got the Sedins there. They've got a lot of talent.
But they're missing, I mean, the drop-off between, you know, look, they're without Alexander Steen. He's not going to play in the tournament. You know, and now they're without Zetterberg. There's a more significant drop-off there than there is in, you know, looking back at Canada, between Carter and Perry and Keith and Bomeister. The other countries just can't afford to lose their guys. They can't replace them with the same level of talent that Canada can.
Yeah, and, you know, we should mention some of the other. I mean, you're talking Nicholas Backstrom. You're talking Carl Hagelin and Patrick Hornquist from the Pittsburgh Penguins. We mentioned the Sedins. I mean, they've got a lot of talent there. Jakob Silverberg on Anaheim, Louis Eriksson, Carl Soderberg. You're talking about a good group of forwards there still without Henrik Zetterberg. So I still think Sweden is one of the favorites to win this tournament. And they've still got the goaltending. Even if Henrik Lundqvist isn't sensational, that group of defensemen can move the puck, and they're really good defensively. So I'm not that concerned. I don't think Sweden is either. I think that they would love to have Henrik Zetterberg. As you mentioned, Drew, he's the captain. He's been the face of Swedish hockey for, what, 10, 15 years now.
Mm-hmm.
But it's unfortunate. I mean, the guys have injuries in the offseason. At the end of the day, Drew, the NHL regular season is more important to these guys than the World Cup. Nobody wants to say that, because it's all about promoting the World Cup, and we're certainly going to promote the World Cup.
Well, next week we'll do a comprehensive World Cup of Hockey preview.
Sure, and that's, you know, it's going to be fun and all that, but at the end of the day, I mean, these guys have to take care of themselves. They don't want to put themselves at risk of getting injured, right? So I think it's a tough pill to swallow that guys like Sean Monahan and Jeff Carter and Zetterberg and Duncan Keith and Jamie Benn, there's a lot of good players that aren't going to be playing in this tournament, but that's just the way it goes.
That is just the way it goes. Another loss for the Team Czech Republic, and this happened late last night. This was announced, just saw it overnight, in fact. David Krejci of the Boston Bruins is out. Roman Cervenka, who's played briefly in the NHL, but played last season with the Swiss club HC Freiburg Göttingen. Not too familiar with that team.
Didn't realize you were fluent in Czech, Drew.
That was Swiss.
Oh.
That was Swiss. But anyways, David Krejci out because he needs time more time to recover from his hip surgery. Roman Cervenka going to replace him. That's a big drop-off. I mean, Krejci obviously was, you know, he's one of the better centermen for the team Czech Republic, and now they're going to be without him. The Czechs, I don't think anybody's expecting much out of them at this upcoming World Cup of Hockey.
No, and they've certainly got a lot of good players. Andrei Palat, Tomas Plekanec, Jakub Voracek, of course. But certainly David Krejci would have been either their best forward or their second best forward. And to me, it comes back to goaltending and defense. And Peter Mrazek and Michael Neuwirth are good goaltenders. We should throw an Andrei Pavlik in there. He probably won't be the starter, but it comes back to defense. And, you know, guys like Radko Gudas and Zdeněk Mihalik, Roman Polak, Andrei Schuster, when you're talking about that group of defensemen and comparing it to Sweden, Canada,
just don't have the foot speed.
You look at that group of defensemen, how are they going to shut down Sidney Crosby and John Tavares and Tyler Seguin and Corey Perry and Ryan Getzlaff? I just don't see it.
I don't disagree with you in the least, but they just don't have the foot speed necessary to keep up with the elite talent and the elite speed that is going to be featured on Team Canada and going to be featured on Team North America and lots of these other countries that are significantly faster and better than the Czech Republic defense. I just want to make note again, mentioned it earlier in the program, during Olympic qualifying yesterday, Frederik Andersen, the starting Toronto Maple Leafs goaltender, was injured. Not yet sure about the status of that injury. He is on his way to Toronto to be evaluated. That would be a killer blow to the Maple Leafs if they were to lose Frederik Andersen for any significant period of time during for the NHL season. So that's keep an eye on the Olympic qualifying tournament that's taking place somewhere in Europe. I'm not honestly 100% sure, but that's Denmark and Slovenia and I guess Latvia, and there must be some other countries taking place in that. So that's where Jets fans, Nikolaj Ehlers participating in that tournament.
Right, and the Leafs signed Jonas Enroth as their backup goaltender because the next goaltender that they had in the system was Garrett Sparks.
Yeah.
So they went out and they signed him, and you know, Enroth, it might be the case where he has to be the starting goaltender at the beginning of the season. He's been a starting goaltender in the NHL, but Freddie Andersen is their number one goaltender. They signed him to a five-year deal, Drew, so you obviously hope that that's not that serious of an injury.
This certainly, Leafs fans would hope that. Jim Toth, the new host of The Big Show here on TSN 1290, joins us next here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN 1290. One final segment this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg.
Just call me the Burger Daddy, Drew.
The Burger Daddy, apparently, is what I'm going to have to call you from now on. Sean Assor is doing a fantastic job producing this program. You're going to hear more from Sean as he's going to join us often on NHL This Week, which, of course, will resume in October with the start of the Winnipeg Jets in the NHL season. We're pleased to bring into the program the new host of The Big Show, mornings here on TSN 1290 from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m., Jim Toth. Jimmy, congratulations and welcome to the program.
Thanks very much, gentlemen. How are you doing today?
We're doing very well. How about yourself? Good celebration last night after the official announcement that you're going to be the new Matt Leibel?
I would say I had one quarter of an annual hustler evening. So, yeah, it was okay.
Well, you know, only hustler can have a hustler evening because that's really that's the big leagues right there, is to have a hustler evening. But great news, of course, that you're going to join the crowd here at TSN 1290. Looking forward to Tuesday with Labor Day, where you make your debut on The Big Show alongside Brandon Ruicki and, of course, Troy Westwood. You know, how are you and Troy going to interact? You guys are confident it's going to be a seamless transition, of course?
Well, I really don't know, and I think we want it that way because I've known Troy for years. Of course, I covered him when he was playing for the Bombers, and then just through being in the media together, I know him a little bit as well, too. And he's always been a good, solid guy and an opinionated guy. But we had one meeting yesterday after the show, and we sort of kept it that way because we sort of want to – I think that's part of the appeal of the new direction of the show, is just to sort of feel each other out and go forward that way, as opposed to, I've always found in broadcasting, especially when you're doing a talk show, and you guys would know this too, that when you have guests on, you want to give them an idea what we're talking about, but not specifics, because you sort of want it to be, you know, off the cuff and honest and opinionated, and I think that's going to be good that way. And Troy said that yesterday, you know, I am who I am, and I said I'm the same. I'm the guy I am, and we both have our points of views and opinions, and we're looking forward to it. And, of course, Brendan Rewicki coming along, and Brendan Rewicki and I debated the Blue Jays and their use of Aaron Sanchez at length yesterday, so we're going to put that probably on the show too. So I'm really looking forward to it. They've got a good thing going already, and, of course, with Matt Leibel there, it was doing good things for a while now, so I'm just happy to jump on board and see what direction we can take it.
Yeah, how are your Judaism conversion classes coming there, Jim?
Well, I am very thankful to Judaism for taking that to the higher calling, but they're not coming along too well, so I'm not that religious of a person who was born Catholic, but I think that that's one of the few things we won't be talking about on the air, and I feel bad for the Jewish Men's Slow Pitch League. I believe you guys are champions again, but it won't get much play because only because I'm not in the league myself. So.
Well, you know, a little conversion here. You can come join the House of Ashkenazi, but that's, I guess, a separate issue for another day and time there, Jim.
Jim, I heard you on the big show on Thursday morning, and you're beaking Matty Leibel a little bit for the man bun. So I guess you don't think that Matt Leibel should take that into the synagogue. You think he should maybe ditch that man bun?
Well, that's maybe something we could take out of Judaism and spread across the world, that maybe the man bun has had its day and can move on. But, yeah, it was interesting. But I understand that to be a rabbi, you have to have the curls, I think, or some do. So he said it's for the higher cause, but I think he just likes being a hipster.
Yeah, I think that's probably more of it than anything else. But, I mean, Jim, you could, if you wanted to, go with a man bun. You do have that, you know, luscious flowing hair that you're so proud of all the time.
Oh, I don't think that's going to happen, guys. That's not a prerequisite, is it, for the hosting show?
No, I
don't. On that show?
No, no. I mean, yeah, I think you should be fine there. Let me ask you.
I'm not an arrogant man except for my hair, and I think we can do better than a man bun.
That's good. I don't disagree in the least, but I would recommend that that Matt Leibel, you know, not wear the man bun, but he doesn't listen to me anymore anyway.
You guys are his friends. Help him out. Friends don't let friends wear man buns.
He doesn't listen to us. He's very stubborn. Uh-huh. It's very, and his wife is very nice and far better than he is, and refuses to remind him that he looks like a complete and total knob when he was wearing that man bun. But that's, you know, again, a separate issue for another day and time. Jim, if I'm not mistaken, you're a big Chicago Bears fan. Is that correct?
That is correct.
You know, NFL season starts in 4 days from now, 5 days from now, kickoff NFL Thursday, a game you can hear live, I think, on TSN 1290. How are you feeling about your Bears entering the 2016-17 NFL season?
Well, I feel about them the same as they did last year, and they're not a playoff team. And you know, guys, it's always funny because it comes down to Jay Cutler, and I get so many emails and people and tweets from people saying how bad he is. And it's funny. I've talked to some actual NFL scouts from that division, and they say they like Jay Cutler has a better arm than Aaron Rodgers. Sure. He says he's got the best arm in the division. I say, come on. And they go, no, he can throw a ball on a rope 60 yards dead straight without missing a beat. He's got the best arm strength. It's between the ears that causes him the troubles when he tries to do it in a triple coverage and stuff. So I thought he managed games really well last year. I really did. And I thought that's, you know, he controlled the turnovers, and that's what you asked for. But they're not a playoff team, but I feel about the same this year as I did last year. They're better than people give them credit for. They improved their defense immensely. That was a big problem, stopping the run. So I don't think they're going to make the playoffs, but I don't think they're going to win 4 games either. I see them winning between 6 to 8, maybe 9 games and missing the postseason, but they will be better than people give them credit for again this year. But, yeah, they're not a disappointment to me still.
You know, Jim, Drew would love to talk about the NFL for the entire show. He's already brought up Sam Bradford, I think, 3 or 4 times now. I'm going to go back to hockey. You do play-by-play for the Manitoba Moose, of course, and when you talk about the Manitoba Moose, the infusion of young players this year, especially with a guy like Kyle Connor, who he probably will make the NHL, but there's a chance he does play for the Manitoba Moose. Jack Roslovic is another guy that if he doesn't go to junior, he's going to potentially play in the AHL. When you look at all of the young guys this year, and it was a tough year for the Manitoba Moose this past season, you're talking about guys like Nick Petan, Brendan Lemieux, J.C. Lapon. How excited are you for the upcoming Manitoba Moose season? Because this year, they're certainly going to be better than they were last year.
Yeah, and they took a lot of grief for being so bad. And the young players, and we talked about Husser earlier, he was on me all year about, like, this can't be good for the kids. And it's not. I mean, there's a lot of guys like Chase DeLeo and Nick Petan that are used to winning, you know, 80% of their games in junior hockey. So it was tough, and it was a tough manage for Keith McCambridge, and I give him a lot of credit for how he handled it and how he managed it, because I never even towards the middle of the season, towards the end of the season, saw the team getting down, because when you're losing that much, it's tough. But Craig Heisinger told me the summer the Moose were coming back, that this is going to be a team where we have to put a lot of draft picks, and it's not going to win a lot of games, and we're not going to sign veterans. The day he said, I just told Jason Jaffrey he's not going to be offered a contract because we're going in a different direction. So they're going to be better this year, but what they're using it for, guys, is to prep for the Jets, and that's what the AHL is. And a lot of teams, you know, have American Hockey League teams, they stash 3 or 4 players with them ready and try to win down there. And the old Moose used to do that because that was their sole business. But what I've seen with the team is they use it specifically for development, and you see that when it's 2-2 or they're down a goal with a minute to go. It's not the Cormiers coming over or the Matt Halaschaks. They're putting Chase DeLeo out because that's what they're using the time for, is to show them and get them experience in all situations. And that's a tough sell on a team when you're putting a rookie line out there with 30 seconds to go to try and tie a game when there's veterans that could probably have a better chance of doing it sitting there. But that's what they use the team for. It's strictly development, and I thought it paid off. When Scott Kosmacek got called up, I thought, oh, man, he's going to be exposed. He fit right in. He didn't miss a beat. I remember J.C. LaPone was the second leading scorer last year, and Keith McCambridge pulled him aside and he said, you're trying to score too much. You're not going to make the NHL as a scorer. You're going to make it as a fourth or third line grinder, be physical, do that, and the points will come. He got called up, and I thought he didn't look out of place. There were some call-ups this year that I thought these guys are going to be in tough and maybe play 2 or 3 minutes, and they played 6 or 7 and did very well, and that's what the Moose are using this year. They'll definitely be better. I'm very interested to see on who goes down, because that step from pro is the biggest step. And I've had many coaches and scouts tell me it's not the step from the HL to the NHL that's the biggest. It's from junior to pros. Guys have to learn to live on their own. And there were some guys who were late for practice and had to sit some games. That's all part of the process away from the game, is learning how to be a pro. And so that's what the Moose are doing with the team. But they will be better. How much better? I'll have to wait and see if the Kyle Connors and the guys like that are there.
Jim Toth is the new host of The Big Show here on TSN 1290. If you liked what you heard just now, be sure to tune in every weekday morning, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Get your morning started here on TSN 1290. Jim, thank you for this. Congratulations again. Welcome aboard. We're excited, and we'll have you on again very soon.
I appreciate it, guys. Enjoy your long weekend.
You too, Jim. Thanks very much for joining us. That's it for this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. A big thank you to all of our guests, Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News, Jonas Siegel of the Canadian Press. You can follow us, of course, on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Keener Jerseys, and Bell Acres and Clear Lake Golf Course. Big props to producer Sean for doing a great job behind the board. Of course, Sean joins us more often on NHL This Week. Again, that'll start again in October with the start of the NHL season. For analyst Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.